the entry gate. A man and woman sat behind a small table with large stacks of paper in front of them. They held quills poised, waiting for his response with bored, impatient expressions. "Single combat," Aaron said. The man frowned as he made a new line on his paper. Already the woman was waving someone else forward. "Name?" the man asked. "Flynn," Aaron said, surprising himself. "Flynn Dalton." The man looked him over once. "Never heard of you." "Maybe we can change that." The clerk rolled his eyes and shook his head as he jotted the name down. "Weapons?"
"Sword."
"Noble or commoner?"
"Commoner."
The man craned his neck to look at him, nodded perfunctorily, and made another note on the paper before holding out his hand.
"Entrance fee?"
"What fee?" Aaron asked. The clerk gave a disgusted look. "You didn't think that the tournament was free, did you? Why, the noble Duke Claudius wouldn't want his tourney overran by a bunch of farmers with pitchforks and more dreams than sense, would he?"
"Of course not," Aaron answered, schooling his anger. "What better way to determine a man's worth than how much gold he has?"
The clerk nodded, satisfied, apparently not detecting the sarcasm in Aaron's voice. "The fee is 250 gold to be paid before entry." Aaron bit back a curse. Adina nodded to Grile, who stepped forward, handing the coins over with obvious reluctance. The clerk took the money, stamped a sheet of paper, signed it, and handed it to Aaron. "Go through the gate and bear left. The melee circle is on the far end of the stadium. There are several waiting rooms set up for the contestants. Go to one, it doesn't matter which. Once there, you'll be outfitted with a blunted blade, and will wait with the other contestants until your name is called." The clerk paused and eyed Aaron's frayed, dusty clothes doubtfully. "If you cannot afford armor of your own, they may be able to find some that will fit you. The contest is single elimination. You'll fight twice a day, once in the morning, again in the afternoon. Should you manage to win all of your matches, you will continue through the third day. On the fourth, the finalists will duel. The winner will be given the immense honor of being presented to Duke Urgal himself, as well as a purse of gold for his victory." The clerk spoke the last in a quick, distracted manner. Clearly he didn't expect Aaron to make it past the first round, let alone receive the reward. "Pompous prick," he thought, but kept himself from saying it. The last thing he needed was to attract attention. "All right then," he said, and started off in the direction the man had indicated, Grile and Adina following in his wake. They had to push their way through crowds of people that were trying to find their seats as they walked past the rows of benches. It took them nearly half an hour to navigate their way through the mess, but they finally arrived at the group of buildings that had been set aside for the contestants. Two well-armored men dressed in the white and blue of Eladin's house stood guard outside the doors of each, their hands never straying far from the thick broadsword sheathed at their belts. Aaron stopped a short distance away from the two guards and turned to the others.
"Well, I better get going."
"Sir, there must be another way, surely," Grail began in protest.
"There's not, and we all know it," Aaron interrupted. "Besides, it's nothing to get worked up about. You heard the man at the gate. We'll be fighting with blunted weapons. People compete in tourneys and contests all the time. It's nothing to worry yourself to death over."
It was Adina who answered. "True, but they don't compete when they barely have the use of one of their arms, or when they almost died a few days ago. Aaron, there has to be something else we can do. We should go back to the inn. I'm sure we'll think of some other way to stop Claudius before Belgarin comes."
5 days, Adina," he said. "You heard the clerk. 5 days before the contest is over. 5 days before Belgarin accepts the rule of Baresh and all of Eladin's holdings. With the might of the North behind him, how will anyone be able to stand against him? So far he's been mostly subtle, choosing scheming and assassination over outright war. But how long will that continue once he's consolidated your late brother's power? How long, once he's in control of over half of the fighting men and women of Tel Rhea, before he decides to throw away the subtleties and hunt you and your remaining brothers and sisters down like dogs in the street?" His words came out in an angry growl at the end.
"No. I can't let that happen. I won't lose you—"
He shook his head. "No. I've spent enough time worrying only about myself. I can't do that anymore. Not now." The princess opened her mouth to speak, but no words came.
"Be careful, sir," the chamberlain said into the silence.
I will pray to the gods for your victory." Aaron smiled. "I doubt they're listening, but you go ahead and pray, Grail. It couldn't hurt." He turned back to Adina's worried expression. "It'll be okay. It's only a tournament. Besides, I'm feeling better, almost back to normal," he lied. "That sewer sludge the old hag gave me must be magic. Still, I call it an even trade." "You can't even move your left arm," Adina said, folding her arms across her chest. He laughed. "Of course I can." He slid the cloak aside and flexed the hand of his wounded arm into a fist, turning his arm first one way and then the other. Adina's eyes widened in surprise. "Wow, you really can move it." Aaron smiled. "I told you, it'll be fine. Besides, I doubt there'll be a good fighter here. I'll probably spend the next 5 days fighting pampered nobles who entered for a chance to strut around and model their newest clothes for the crowds. I'd be surprised if any of them even knows how to hold a sword, let alone use one." "All right," she said. "But promise me that if you start to hurt or feel weak, that you'll stop. It won't serve anyone for you to pass out or die because you pushed yourself too far too soon." Smiling, he bowed his head. "Of course, princess. You have my word." "Okay," she said reluctantly. "Then, I guess we'll see you after your first match." He offered his hand to the chamberlain, who took it. He pulled the man close, so that he could whisper in his ear. "Watch out for her, Grail. We haven't seen any of Astur or Belgarin's men recently, but that doesn't mean they're not here. When his scouts didn't return, I'm sure Belgarin sent men out in search of us. You stay quiet, and stay low, and if you see anybody that looks out of place, you take the princess and run like your feet are on fire and your ass is catching. You got it?" Grail swallowed hard and nodded. "Yes, sir." Aaron released him and winked at the princess. "All right, then. You two kids stay out of trouble. I'll see you in a bit." With that, he turned and started toward the armory, waiting until he was out of their hearing before he finally released a gasp of pain and gritted his teeth at the pain lancing up his arm. He uncovered his wounded arm enough to see that it was shaking badly, before throwing his cloak over it again. He was surprised by the deep sense of guilt that spread through him as he replayed his words to the princess. After all, a well-told lie was as much the tool of a sellsword as his blade, and often more dangerous. Especially when you've only got one good arm. Despite what he told the others, he knew that it was a great risk he was taking. But what choice did they have? Even if he did somehow manage to make it past the dozen or so guards surrounding the fat bastard, an impossible task, he damn sure wouldn't make it out. The soldiers would come in swinging, and their blades wouldn't be blunted. So it was time to take a chance. It wasn't like he hadn't done it before. Still, the thought gave him little comfort. It was almost as if he could hear Illadin's dice rattling in his godly cup, and he thought he knew what the role would be. Chapter 33. Inside, torches had been placed in brackets against the wall, and the reddish-orange glow spilled over the floor and everyone inside, making them look as if they were covered in blood. He stumbled and plopped down on a nearby bench, using the tail of his cloak to wipe cold sweat, what his old master had called pain sweat, from his forehead. "Stop if I feel weak or tired," he thought, shaking his head. "That's a joke." Flexing his hurt arm against the pain building here, he glanced around the room. Men of all shapes and sizes crowded the benches, or stood by themselves putting their blunt weapons through practice strokes. Several groups of two or three nobles, smiling and richly dressed as if for a ball, bragged to one another as they shot disgusted or pitying looks at the commoners in the room. "I feel sorry for them," one young dandy said, laughing and nudging one of his friends. "Perhaps if the weapon was a hoe or a shovel, they'd stand a better chance. It seems unfair." Aaron shook his head as he glanced around the room at the lean, hard-faced commoners of which the youth spoke. Hard faces and hard men, he thought, and the boy would have to be blind not to see it. "They are blind," Ko said, "blind to the suffering of others and their own shortcomings." "Yeah," Aaron thought back. "In my experience, Firefly, gold has a way of doing that." He turned away from the nobles and raised an eyebrow as he noticed the man in the corner of the room. The man had to be at least 7.5 feet tall, with shoulders as wide as three of the nobles standing side by side. The man noticed Aaron watching him, and his eyes drew down in a scowl before he popped his knuckles and spat. Aaron ignored the challenge and looked to the man sitting on a bench near the giant, a thin man whose long, filthy hair hung in his eyes. The man was reclined against a support beam, his eyes closed as if in sleep. On the other side of the room, a short, stocky man with a thick, jagged scar across his throat knelt in prayer. The man had been hung, that was certain, but apparently it didn't take. Except for the nobles, to all of whom this was only a game, all of the men in the room shared a look in their eyes and the sets of their jaws that he knew well. It was the look of a killer, or a man who was prepared to become one. Aaron had been given occasion to see such looks before. To the nobles, 5,000 gold pieces was nothing, but to the commoners that were gathered in the room, it was a fortune, enough so that they'd never have to spend any more days digging and rooting in the muck like animals, enough so that their sons and daughters, their wives and parents, would never go hungry again. If that's not enough to make a man a killer, he thought to himself, what is? You told the princess that there would be no men to fear in the contest, Ko reminded him. A lie, he answered simply. And not the worst I've told. Surely you must have known that. You couldn't have existed for hundreds, thousands of years and not gained a better understanding of men than that. Shit, there are plenty of men who would murder their own family for that kind of money. How much easier to beat to death some man you've never met. I had thought that perhaps you knew something I didn't, Ko answered, the annoyance clear in her girlish voice. I didn't think you'd be foolish enough to take on would-be murderers wounded. Aaron laughed inwardly. The man who taught me the sword once told me that we are all murderers in the making, Firefly. We're just waiting for the thing that is more precious to us than another man's life. For some it is gold, for others women, for most pride. But make no mistake, it is always something. Besides, being capable of killing someone is quite different from being able to. You worry too much. The last time you told me I worried too much, you ended up with a knife in your back and another in your arm. Maybe you don't worry enough. He scowled at that, but chose not to respond. Instead, he rose, took a moment to steady himself against the pain the movement brought on, then began to inspect the beaten weapons and ragged suits of makeshift armor hanging by hooks in the center of the room. He tested the weight and quality of several of the blades until he finally settled on a long, thin sword. The grip had been wrapped tight with leather, and the steel of the sword was beaten and nicked from use. Still, the weapon was surprisingly well balanced. Satisfied, he walked back to his spot and sat down, leaning his newly acquired blade on the bench beside him. "What of armor?" Ko asked. "What?" he thought back. "Those tin cans? No, thank you. It would only serve to slow me down, and I doubt I could heft the damn things right now anyway." "You're determined to get yourself killed." Aaron smiled a tight, humorless smile and lay back on the bench. Ko made a frustrated sound in his mind, but he paid it little attention. Instead, he closed his eyes and waited for his name to be called, wondering idly if he'd be able to raise himself off the bench when the time came. Chapter 34 "He'll be okay, mistress." Adina turned to the chamberlain and tried to force a smile. "Thank you, Grail. I pray to the gods that you're right." All around them, the benches were packed with people chattering eagerly, laughing and bragging about their favorites in anticipation of the bouts to come. "You heard him," Grail continued. "He said that..." The rest of what he said was lost in a sudden roaring cheer from the crowd that was so powerful that it shook the bench beneath her as an announcer, dressed in the white and blue of Elidan's house, made his way into the melee circle. He stopped in the center and turned to face the nobles. He held his hands up for silence, and the cheering subsided. "Gentlemen and gentle ladies," the man shouted in a nasally voice that carried to everyone present as he spread his hands wide to encompass all of the nobles seated in front of him. "I welcome you to one of the largest tournaments Baresh has ever seen, where some of the world's best warriors are gathered to pit themselves against one another in three contests, single combat, general melee, and of course the joust, for your entertainment." The commoner side of the arena erupted in shouts and cheers. A few of the nobles, those not too preoccupied with appearing bored or unimpressed, clapped half-heartedly. "Our noble Duke Claudius," the announcer said, bowing in the Duke's direction before continuing, "is offering an unheard-of purse of 5,000 gold to the contest winners as well as..." He paused as the commoner side of the arena broke out in wild applause again at the mention of gold. Once the cheers died down, the man continued, "as well as an audience with the Duke himself." This time, it was the commoner's turn to remain silent while the nobles clapped loudly. All seeking favor with their new ruler, Adina thought angrily, fawning and posturing while their true ruler lies dead. Not that they knew that, of course. No doubt Claudius himself was aware of it, but Belgarion would have commanded him in no uncertain terms to keep it a secret until he took power. But she was still disgusted at how quickly the loyalty of the nobles had shifted. Perhaps Aaron wasn't wrong about them after all. Still, it was no great surprise. Elladan had been one of the few rulers who treated the common folk like people instead of livestock, treating them as equals to the nobles themselves, a fact that rankled those pompous lords and ladies of old blood who thought themselves as different from commoners as men were from dogs. Elladan had allowed the commoners to bring their issues and grievances to court, had often even punished nobles who mistreated their workers, a thing unheard of in other parts of the world. Up to a week ago, when she first arrived in Avarest and met Aaron, Adina had thought that her brother was foolish for so often taking the side of commoners over nobles. To her, it served to alienate the nobles, men of power and wealth, in a time when he needed both to overcome Belgarian's armies. For no purpose. It wasn't 6 months ago, in fact, when she'd argued with him about it. She'd been angry and rash with her words. But Elladan had only smiled the same warm smile she remembered from her childhood, and said, "The commoners grow our food, working long, hard days, so that their families as well as ours might not starve. While the nobles boast of our certain victory in the war, it is the commoners who give up their sons, their fathers, and husbands to fight it. Which seems more noble to you, dear sister?" At the time, she'd been furious with him, amazed that he couldn't understand the importance of the old-blooded families and their wealth. After all, it took money to make weapons, money to feed and clothe armies. But she'd finally given up, storming out of Elladan's palace and leaving for Edrafil without so much as a goodbye. It was the last time she'd ever seen her brother alive. She shook her head and wiped angrily at the tears that had begun to gather in her eyes. "If only you'd listened, El, you might still be alive." She hated herself for the thought. She was beginning to understand that her brother had been right, after all, but that didn't change the fact that one, possibly several of those nobles on the other side of the arena, could have known something about Elladan's assassination before it happened. Those men and women dressed in rich silks and velvets, that laughed and preened, the women fussing over their hair and their clothes, while the men no doubt spoke vehemently about the glory and honor of battle, though most of them had never fought in one themselves, might have saved her brother's life. She knew, as she had thought, that she was right, and she hated herself for it. She frowned, staring angrily across the tournament grounds at Claudius. The Duke was laughing at some joke told by one of the ambitious lackeys as he stuffed his face with some sweet meats. "You'll pray for what you did," she thought bitterly, "even if I have to die to see it done. I swear by Nalesh, father of the gods, you'll pay." She was so caught up in her own thoughts, her own fury, that it wasn't until two warriors emerged from different armories and began to make their way to the center of the circle that she realized the announcer had called for the first contestants. The crowd whispered in hushed disbelief as the two contestants stopped in the center of the circle, facing each other. One of the fighters was a big, brutish bull of a man, with a thick neck and massive hands that looked like they could crush stones. His head was shaved bald, revealing a thick, ugly scar that ran down his forehead to his jaw. The man's massive slab-like muscles pressed tightly against the dirty linen shirt he wore as he popped his neck, his grin displaying rows of rotten teeth. The other contestant, an old gray-haired man that couldn't be any taller than Adina herself, looked unconcerned at the hulking savage towering over him. "He must be insane," she thought sadly. "Give up now, and I'll let you live, old man," the monster growled. and despite her fear for the small grey-haired contestant, Adina was impressed, and more than a little unnerved, by how well the arena amplified the sound, so that it seemed as if the man had spoken from right beside her. The old man pulled his long ponytail of grey hair over one shoulder, smiled, and nodded his head, saying something that she couldn't hear.
"Ha!" the giant barked. "There won't be enough of you left for your family to bury when I'm done with you, you stupid bastard. That money's mine."
The old man's casual smile remained in place as the announcer made his way to the center of the circle and stood in front of the two contestants. Once again, he turned to address the nobles.
"The rules are simple. The contestants will fight until one man yields or is unable to carry on. The winner will be allowed to leave until later this evening, when he will participate in his second match. The loser will be eliminated."
He turned to the two fighters and spoke in a normal voice that was still loud enough for everyone in the arena to hear.
"Are you both ready?"
The big man reached behind his back and withdrew the massive two-handed sword strapped there, and Adina let out a quiet gasp of surprise. Blunted blade or not, the old man would surely be killed with one hit of that blade. She clenched her jaws. Why wasn't the fool wearing armor? Why did he enter the contest in the first place? He looked like someone's favorite grandfather, not a warrior. The small man took a step back and withdrew his own long, slender sword.
"Begin!"
Adina winced expectantly as the big man growled and charged forward, bringing his blade down in a vicious blow that would have decapitated the small man despite the blunted edge. A sharp intake of breath from the crowd made it clear that Adina wasn't the only one watching in dreaded expectation. But when the huge sword cleaved through the air where he'd been standing, the old man was no longer there. She had just enough time to register the look of surprise on the bald man's face before the grey-haired contestant, who'd stepped neatly to the side, whipped his sword around and under the man's throat.
"Do you yield?"
the old man asked, his voice surprisingly calm.
"Fuck you," the big man growled,
shoving the blunted blade away with one hand and swinging his own weapon in a wide arc meant to cave in the old man's face. Instead of retreating, the old man ducked smoothly under the blow, with less than an inch to spare, and countered with his own blade, slamming it into the side of the man's leg. The giant let out a grunt as his leg gave out underneath him, and he fell to one knee, his sword slipping out of his fingers and clattering to the ground. He started to rise, and again the old man's blade was at his throat.
"Do you yield?"
The giant shouted wordlessly, grabbed the dull blade, tore it from the man's grip and threw it away. The old man backed up as the other contestant waded toward him, his fists swinging wildly. Finally, the small man stepped to the side of one of the other contestants' haymakers, and his own fist lashed out like lightning and connected with the man's temple. The giant staggered drunkenly for a few steps, a dazed look on his face, before crumpling to the ground, unconscious. For several seconds, the arena was impossibly silent as everyone took in what had happened. Then the crowd erupted in cheers and laughter so loud that Adina thought her head would burst.
"Did you see that?" someone close to her shouted. "He knocked that big bastard down like he was a stripling."
For their part, Claudius and the nobles gathered around him appeared bored, and Adina thought cheated, as if they'd been hoping to see the old man's brains dashed out with the giant's claymore. The announcer beckoned the two men standing on the sidelines. They rushed forward, grabbing the giant by his legs and under his arms, visibly straining under his weight as they carried him off the field. When they were gone, the announcer moved forward with a strut of importance and motioned the winner forward. He draped an arm across the old man's shoulders as if they were lifetime friends, turning him to face Claudius and the other nobles.
"Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the first bout."
There was a pause as he leaned toward the contestant and asked him something in a whisper. He nodded as the wiry old man answered, finally turning back to face the crowd of nobles once more.
"The winner of the first bout, Rashan Kaltier."
The old man turned to face the commoners and bowed low, and the cheering and hollering grew louder still. After a moment, the wiry old man rose, tossed his long grey ponytail over his shoulder, and walked away from the circle without sparing the nobles a glance. "There'll be trouble for that," Adina thought, as she noted the frowns of Claudius and the others around him. It was, after all, one thing for the nobles to act uninterested in everyone else. It was quite another for everyone else to act uninterested in them.
If there's one thing she'd learned from the years spent in her father's court, as well as her own, it was that nobles were worse than children when it came to jealousy. Finally, the commoners grew silent, and the announcer called for the next two contestants. Several more bouts took place, and Adina had begun to grow restless, not to mention cold. How did these northern women stand it? When the announcer stepped into the circle again, avoiding several new splatters of blood on the ground, and waiting for the two men to drag another unconscious form away. At least, Adina hoped he was unconscious, but the blow he'd taken to the head could have easily been fatal. She jerked forward in her seat as the announcer called for Flynn Dalton, the name Aaron had used. After a moment, the sellsword appeared, walking out of the armory and toward the circle. And though he didn't limp, she noticed that his jaws were clenched tightly. "He's hurt more than he said," she thought worriedly. "He'll be okay," Grail said beside her. "He'll be okay," and she nodded, despite the fact that she got the distinct impression the Chamberlain was talking more to himself than her. She quailed as she saw Aaron's opponent walk out of an adjacent building. The man wore an intimidating suit of dark green plate armor, with a fig tree emblazoned in gold on its front. The visor of his helmet was raised, revealing sharp, hawk-like features that weren't unhandsome, and an expression of disdain that said more clearly than any words could what he thought of his unarmored, commoner opponent as he swaggered to a stop in front of the sellsword before finally dropping his visor. As soon as the announcer gave them leave, the noble waded in, swinging his sword in vicious arcs meant to end the farce early. With each strike, Adina's heart leapt in her throat, for fear that Aaron's wounds would slow him down too much, and that one of the wild blows would connect. Instead, each time the knight swung, Aaron's sword was somehow there in the last second, deflecting the blow and sending it harmlessly to the side, or knocking it up high as the sellsword circled around the man, keeping him at a distance. Each time he sent the man's sword wide, she waited tensely for him to counter, as she had so often seen her father's soldiers do when she was younger. Instead, Aaron continued to evade the man's blows by hair's breadth, ducking and rolling out of the way at the last second. "Attack!" she thought wildly. "Why isn't he attacking?" Aaron's movements appeared to be growing more sluggish with each passing moment. All it would take was for one of those blows to land, and he would be finished. The knight swung again, but reversed direction on the blade and sent it back at the sellsword. She gasped in fear, but instead of taking the blunted blade in the face, Aaron ducked with a grace she wouldn't have thought his weary frame could muster, and stepped smoothly under the swiping steel, coming up behind his opponent. She leaned forward, sure that this was it, that he was going to finish it now. But instead of rushing forward, the sellsword backed away as the knight turned ponderously around and started toward him. "He waits," a voice that wasn't Grail's said beside her. The Chamberlain let out a squeak of shock. Adina turned and was surprised to see the old man from the first bout sitting next to Grail. The man's face was leathery from years spent in the sun, and crow's feet surrounded his eyes and mouth. "Excuse me, sir," she asked suspiciously, suddenly painfully aware of the tournament guards that patrolled back and forth in front of the benches in search of trouble. Was it only her imagination, or had that last one been eyeing her too closely? "Were you talking to me?" He smiled. "To both of you, actually," he said, nodding to Grail. He gripped hands with the Chamberlain, then took the princess's and kissed it softly. "You may call me Rashan Kaltier. And yourselves?"
"I'm Anaya," she stumbled, cursing herself silently. "And this is my servant, Edward." Apparently not noticing her slip, the man smiled.
"It's nice to meet you, Naya, Edward."
"Nice to meet you too, sir,"
Grail stumbled.
"That is your man, is it not?"
he asked, gesturing at Aaron, who even now came within inches of getting struck with an overhead slash that would have knocked him senseless as he stepped to the side.
"Why do you ask?"
she asked distractedly, her hands clenched into fists at her sides as she watched the bout.
"No particular reason," the man answered, his own eyes locked on the combat. "Please forgive an old man the pleasantries."
She turned to study the man for a moment. He sounded sincere, and he didn't look like a soldier who would work for her brother. But there was no way to be sure. Still, there was no point lying to him. Clearly, he'd already seen her with Aaron. She shot a quick glance at the Chamberlain
before turning back to the old man, ready to bolt if he made a move for her.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm just nervous. He's almost gotten hit several times now."
"You're wrong in that,"
the man said, flashing her a smile that seemed to know too much.
"Your husband has got his opponent's measure now. It won't be long."
Adina felt her stomach lurch uncomfortably. Had she imagined his emphasis on the word husband? She couldn't tell for certain. "What do you mean he has his measure?"
"Watch," the man said, gesturing at the two contestants as the sellsword knocked aside another blow of the knight's sword.
"Do you see how he lets the other contestant tire himself? A man in heavy armor can't keep up a pace like that for long, trust me. Soon he'll begin to slow. His strikes will become sloppier, and he'll begin to neglect to cover himself against the counter. No, your husband has done this before, madam."
Adina drew in a sharp breath as the knight's sword passed within an inch of the sellsword's face. "If he knows what he's doing, then why did he let him get so close?" she demanded angrily.
"It's better that way. Let the hound smell the blood. Let him get so close he can nearly taste it. Let him go mad with the scent of it."
Adina noticed that indeed, the armored man's vicious attacks had slowed. His armored feet dragged noticeably, and the acoustics of the arena were such that she could hear his panting, labored breaths, even from her spot on the bench.
"And once he's weak," the man continued, his dull gray eyes locked on the battle,
"once he's overcome with exhaustion and has no fight left, when he least expects it, that is when you strike." As if on cue, Aaron dodged to the side of one of the knight's overhand strikes, but instead of circling out of range as before, he raised his blunted sword with both hands and brought it down in a brutal chop to the man's extended arm. The knight let out a howl of agony, and his sword fell out of nerveless fingers. He bent over, apparently trying to retrieve his blade, despite the fact that his arm must have been smarting terribly. But Aaron surged forward, bringing his sword into the back of the knight's knees in a vicious sweep. The man cried out again as his legs gave out beneath him, and he crumpled to the ground in a crash of steel. Aaron took a few steps forward and laid his sword across the back of the fallen man's head. The knight cringed beneath the blade, and though his helmet was twisted crookedly from the fall and muffled his voice, his pained words were clear enough for everyone to hear. "I yield." Aaron nodded and started back toward the armory, ignoring the calls of the announcer, who stepped into the center of the circle as his two helpers began the task of getting the armor-laden knight to his feet.
"Flynn Dalton, my good people!" The commoners roared louder than they had yet, laughing boldly, and she heard whispered jokes about how a peasant had defeated an armored knight. "And now," the announcer continued, shouting to be heard over the applause, "we will take a 4-hour intermission."
"You are right," she said, chagrined that the stranger could know so much more about what the sellsword was doing, despite the fact that she'd spent nearly the entire last week with him. She turned and let out a gasp of surprise as she noticed that the old man was no longer there.
"Grile?"
The chubby man made an effort and finally managed to jerk his gaze away from the knight, who was only now getting up from the ground with the help of the two struggling men.
"Princess?"
"Where did he go?" Grile looked around in surprise.
"I thought that he was just there, mistress. I never heard him leave."
"Me neither," Adina said, goosebumps breaking out on her arms. Why had the man sat next to them? Why had he insisted on speaking so much? Suddenly she was sure that when she'd been talking about Aaron's strategy, he hadn't just been talking about that. In fact, the more she thought over their conversation, the faster her heart began to beat. Was it possible that the man worked for Belgarin, or even Aster, and had been toying with them? But to what purpose? It didn't make sense, but the thought did little to thaw the foreboding that had settled into her stomach like a chunk of frozen ice.
Chapter 35. Aaron sighed, exhausted, as he finished strapping his real sword back in place and threw his cloak over it. He fingered the worn leather handles of the blades hanging at his side, reassuring himself of their presence. He'd hated having to leave them, even for the bout, but there'd been no choice. Belgarin's men couldn't be far behind, and the last thing he wanted was to get caught with nothing but a blunted blade of poor quality to protect himself and the others with. He flexed the fingers of his left arm and winced. Ko was doing everything she could to keep the pain back, but the arm still felt stiff and weak, and no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't stop it from trembling. The two-handed blow he'd struck the night hadn't helped matters, and his arm was protesting strongly even now, reminding him that he was pushing himself too far, too soon. Naya had been right about that. Still, what choice did he have? None, he thought sourly, and that's the truth of it. He made his way past other contestants, gathering their gear toward the armory's exit. As he opened the door, he was confronted with a crowd of people who'd apparently taken the intermission as an invitation to crowd the tournament grounds, congratulating and shaking hands with their favorites. He kept his head down, avoiding their gazes, as he worked his way through the jostling people. Several commoners slapped him on the back and congratulated him on his victory, and he nodded, thanking them, as he continued past. He didn't care for their attention. It was just another way for him to stick out, another way for his head to end up on the business end of a noose or an executioner's axe. But not responding to the commoners would have made him stick out even more. After all, a man who joined the tournament for the money, as all of the commoners had, would be content after his first victory, not sullen, not eyeing everyone around him as if he expected a knife in the back. Never mind the fact that he did. Not graceful, perhaps, a voice said behind him, but effective. Aaron turned, and his eyes widened as he took in the man who'd spoken. It had been over 10 years since he had last seen Master Darrell, the man who'd taken him in and taught him the blade when he'd been nothing but a starving runaway in the streets of an unfamiliar city, but he recognized him instantly. True, his old master's midnight black hair had gone to gray, and there were leathery wrinkles around his eyes and mouth that Aaron didn't remember, but the man had the same reserved manner, the same cool gray eyes. "Ma, my name," the short, wiry man interrupted, meeting his eyes with a hard gaze, "is Rashan Kaltier. A pleasure to meet you." Aaron frowned for a moment, then finally nodded. "The pleasure's mine," he said, offering his hand. "You may call me Flynn." The man took his hand and smiled. "So," he said as he clapped Aaron on the back, "does Baresh's arena suit your tastes, stranger?" "What are you—" "An interesting fact," the man went on, as if Aaron had never spoken. "You may have noticed that the announcer needed to only speak in normal volume to be heard all throughout the arena. It is said that Prince Elidan designed the theatre that way so that there would be no chance that a man would ever try to yield and not be heard." He shrugged. "True or not, it cannot be denied that the arena amplifies sound incredibly. Why, I don't doubt that any man or woman sitting in the stands could hear individual conversations as if the men involved were standing right beside him. Interesting, don't you agree?" Aaron nodded slowly. "Very." Darrell grinned. "I managed to catch a bit of your fight. It was... interesting." Aaron snorted. "I won. It's enough." The swordmaster shrugged. "I suppose you are right. Still, a wise man once said that grace is the mother of combat, and the beauty of battle is a thing more spectacular than the smile of a newborn babe." Aaron grunted, unable to hide his smile. "I never held much with poets or philosophers. Fools and boy lovers, the lot of them, I think." The old man laughed. "History as well as the future is written by such fools, my friend. I shudder to think what the man who trained you must have suffered through with such a, shall we say, stubborn attitude to work with?" The sellsword nodded as they maneuvered around a group of laughing nobles. "Perhaps it was a trial for him," he agreed. "But I doubt he minded much. He was a good enough sort, but I got the distinct impression that he was touched in the head." "Oh?" Darrell said, a look of surprise on his face. "And here I thought the man must have been granted the wisdom and patience of the gods themselves, not to mention their kindness, to have dealt with such a single-minded pupil as yourself. Truly, he must be a remarkable and talented man. One to be revered, I suspect." "I doubt that he still lives. The man was ancient when I knew him, and that was years ago. By now I imagine he's feeding the worms or tottering around on a cane, rambling about the invisible gnomes that keep peeing in his bed to any unlucky soul that happens by." The old man laughed,
but then his eyes grew serious. Either way, he must be commended for his efforts. After all, he did teach you a considerable amount of skill with the sword. It is no easy task to take down a fully armored knight with a blunted weapon. Especially, he said, leaning in and clamping Aaron on his wounded arm hard enough to make him wince. When wounded? Why, a man would have to be very desperate or very stupid to enter into such a grand tourney with an arm that was barely of use. Aaron frowned back. Desperate times make desperate men. This is true, Darrell agreed, and I'm sure I'm not the only one to have noticed. Why, anyone with eyes to see would be aroused to curiosity. A great way of drawing attention to oneself, if that is the goal. Perhaps it would help to talk about it. He detected the disapproval of the old master's voice, and it took all he had to restrain himself from telling this man, who had been like a father to him for many years, everything that had happened. It wasn't only the fear of being overheard that stayed him, however, but also the knowledge that to inform Darrell of everything that had happened would only put him in danger, and he deserved better than that for all that he'd done for the starving young boy who'd lost his way. I am sure that all will be clear in time, he said cryptically, raising a hand to Adina and Grile as they finally extricated themselves from the pressing bodies and started toward the benches. Speaking of time, the grey-haired man said, casually, did you know that Belgarian himself is supposedly visiting Baresh? Aaron felt himself tense at the prince's name, but the old man went on as if he didn't notice. It is the talk of all the inns and bars. In fact, they say that the prince was initially supposed to arrive in 5 days, but that he's due to arrive early. Some say as early as the day after tomorrow. Aaron felt his stomach lurch, but he struggled to appear calm as they continued through the crowd. Oh? Why would Prince Belgarin visit Baresh? I thought that he and Elladin were at war. His old master shrugged. So did I, but the rumors are plentiful enough that they are hard to doubt. Strange indeed. Especially considering the fact that no one else has seen or heard from Elladin in over a week's time. Perhaps Belgarin comes to seek peace with the noble Duke Claudius. Aaron's mind was too awhirl with ideas and the impending threat of Belgarin's early arrival to respond. And before he knew it, they had arrived where Grile and the princess waited. Are you okay? Adina asked, and he could see the worry in her and the chamberlain's gazes. He nodded. I'm fine. The man barely knew what end of his sword to hold. He was just here to show off his fancy armor more than anything, I imagine. Adina frowned. The man had seemed competent enough, and whether it had been Aaron's strategy to wear the knight down or not, she was pretty certain that at least a few of those blows had almost connected. If you say so. I do, Aaron answered. Trust me, the man was hopeless. If the rest are no better, it'll be a boring tournament. Truly, my lady, Darrell said, as he walked out from behind Aaron and gave a bow. The man had no chance. Adina stared at the man warily, but Aaron didn't appear to be bothered by the stranger's presence. In fact, there was something about the way the two of them seemed completely comfortable with each other that struck her as odd. From her experience, Aaron wasn't the type of person that made quick friends, and this man, whom she'd taken for a stranger, was already taking up for him. What was that about? Do you two know each other? The two men glanced at each other in surprise. It was the old man who spoke first. Well, that would be quite a coincidence, my lady. No, this is my first time meeting. He paused, looking embarrassed. I'm sorry, sir. What did you say your name was? Flynn, the sellsword answered, and Adina was sure she'd seen Aaron smile for a second. Flynn Dalton. The grey-haired man nodded as he gripped Aaron's hand. A pleasure to meet you, Flynn. You as well. The princess eyed them silently, and their innocent smiles cracked and then disappeared as they avoided meeting her gaze. Something wasn't right here. She was sure of it. What? Well, Aaron interrupted, turning to the grey-haired man, we really must be going. Good luck in the tournament, Rashan. Perhaps we'll meet again. The stranger nodded, a smile playing at the corner of his mouth. If the gods will it. With a grunt, Aaron turned back to the others. Come on, let's go. The princess bit back her questions as she and Grile hurried after the already departing sellsword.
Chapter 36. Back at the inn, Aaron sighed as he unstrapped his blades and propped them in the corner of the room. The princess had sent him up to rest while she and Grail got some food from the kitchen below and brought it up. Normally, the innkeeper assured them, their food would be brought to their rooms, but it was all he and his two serving women could do to manage the bar downstairs, what with the massive crowds the contest had attracted. He tried to put on a grim expression when he'd spoken of it, as if he regretted the busy crowds, but Aaron had seen the smile in the man's eyes. And why not? The crowds meant more people to buy the hard bread that had appeared to be dangerously close to moulding, and what Aaron suspected were weak old sausages. Not to mention more people to rob. Of course, even fresh, meat would have been suspect in an inn such as this. After all, good beef could be hard to come by, but there was never a shortage of stray cats and dogs in a city like Baresh, and in Aaron's experience, such animals always seemed to find their way to the shadier, less scrupulous parts of the city. He stretched his aching muscles, being sure to do so carefully, so as not to tweak his wounded arm. He looked at it sourly. The damn thing's trembling didn't seem to be getting any better. In fact, he was beginning to think it was getting worse. "It is," Co said. "You are pushing yourself too far. Much more of this, and you'll end up killing yourself." "Come on now, Firefly," he muttered. "It's not so bad as all that. You sound even worse than the princess." "Princess Adina is an intelligent woman, but I have the added advantage of knowing when you're lying. You forget that I feel your pain as if it was my own. You were barely able to stand after your fight, no matter what you say. You can't go on like this." "As if I have a choice," he shot back. He walked across the room, slid the door open quietly, and looked both ways. Assuring himself that the hall was empty, he reached into the pocket of his trousers and withdrew the note that his old master had given him when they shook hands. That had been dangerous, sneaking a note past the princess, even as she was watching them, but Daryl had always enjoyed his subtleties. To Aaron's mind, it was one of the man's biggest flaws. He unfolded the small piece of parchment and nodded along as he read. "I find that when I am troubled, it often helps to talk to the gods. Nalesh, in particular, seems to listen. Surprisingly, the poor district of Baresh has a small, but not totally inadequate, church. Should you need comfort, it is as good a place to start as any." There was no signature. Aaron sighed heavily. The man enjoyed his games too much. It wasn't as if someone was going to get hold of the note. He snatched a look out the window. Based on the sun, he still had 3 hours or so before he needed to be back at the tourney grounds, and he was certain that he'd seen the church Daryl spoke of on his way into the city. If he was right, the place was no more than a 15-minute walk away. Based on how crowded the downstairs of the inn had been, and how harried the serving girls and single cook had looked, he suspected that Adina and the Chamberlain would still be waiting some time yet. He should have plenty of time to run over to a church, meet Daryl, and be back before the others ever knew he was gone. "You could just tell her," the Virtue said, disapprovingly. "It's better if I don't," he thought back. Daryl was a good man, but a lot can change in 10 years. For all I know, he could be working for Belgarin right now. It seemed like too much of a coincidence that he just so happens to be here, and I don't like coincidences. No, it's better to wait. I don't want to involve Grail or the princess until I know one way or the other. And if he is working for Belgarin, what then? You just walk right into an ambush, wounded, and hope to escape with your life? In the words of a once great general, he said, when all choices are shitty, a man must pick the one most likely to leave him alive to wash. There was a pause. Then, "You made that up," he grinned as he started toward the door. Possibly. Chapter 37. He approached the small church warily, eyeing the back alleys for concealed soldiers. If anything, Baresh's poor district was even more haphazardly constructed than the Downs. Hundreds of short bisecting alleys and pathways honeycombed the district, as if made by some mad engineer who'd made it his sole purpose to confuse anyone who dared travel its streets. The alleyways were probably useful to most people, but for him, just now, they only served as possible hiding places for men bent on ambush. The street the church was on was in even worse disrepair than most, and with the contest drawing so many people to the tourney grounds, it was completely deserted. Not surprising, perhaps, since it dead-ended into the Church of Nalesh. There had been a time, hundreds, possibly thousands of years ago, before the birth of many of the other gods, when humans had worshipped Nalesh, the father god, and no other. But that time had long since passed. Now most people worship one of the descendants of the father god, the major gods, sons and daughters, or even their sons and grandsons, the minor gods, those who represented specific things. Instead of praying to Nalesh, a god not known for his mercy or his compassion, for fertile soil or a better yield, farmers prayed to Nalek, the god of growing things, or even his daughter Kalia, goddess of agriculture and farming. In this way, men and women felt that they prayed to gods who cared specifically about their concerns and their problems. Not that Aaron had ever seen any evidence, of course, but he understood the human need to categorize. He walked up to the rundown church and opened the door, noticing the print his fingers left on the dusty doorknob as he closed it behind him. Inside, the church was dark and smelled of must and decay. The only light came from a single candle that burned on a rough wooden altar. Above the altar hung a simple wooden carving of Nalesh. Despite the rough material from which the carving was fashioned, the father of the gods managed to appear noble as he held the Book of Life in his left hand and the quill that he supposedly used to create it in his right. At the foot of the altar, the candlelight illuminated Aaron's old master on both knees, his head bowed as he whispered a hushed prayer. He turned as Aaron took another step into the room, his expression serious.
"Ah, you came."
"Yes." The small gray-haired man rose nimbly and started toward Aaron with a grace that few would have credited a man of his age. Aaron noted the man's narrowed eyes and clenched jaws, and wondered yet again if he'd stumbled into an ambush. His former master stopped a pace in front of him and eyed him warily. He felt his heart begin to speed up under the man's steely-eyed scrutiny, until abruptly, Darrell's face broke out into a wide grin, and he clapped Aaron on the back and clasped his hand warmly. "By the gods, but it's good to see you, boy." Despite his earlier wariness, Aaron felt himself smiling back.
"And you, master."
The old man rolled his eyes.
"Oh, don't start with that nonsense. It's been many years since I was your master, and you didn't listen worth a damn even when I was."
"I sure did," Aaron protested, his own grin widening, "at least when you told me something that had some sense to it."
"What is," Darrell said meaningfully. "A man must find meaning on his own."
Aaron quirked an eyebrow.
"More philosophy?"
His old master shrugged.
"I find myself growing more thoughtful in my old age. For instance, I wonder why you did not bring the woman, or that man, with you."
Aaron opened his mouth to speak, and stopped. Noticing his hesitance, Darrell nodded in understanding.
"I see. You thought it safest to leave them alone until you discovered if I was a threat."
Guilt washed over him at the note of understanding in his old master's voice.
"I didn't mean to—" "Of course you did, lad," Darrell said, "and I can't blame you. Why, I'd have been forced to question my own teaching if you trusted in me wholeheartedly. After all, it has been over 10 years.
"Forgive me, sir," Aaron said. "It's just that, well, seeing you here, it seemed like too much of a coincidence." Darrell nodded.
"Of course. Still, I can't help wondering what kind of situation you've managed to get yourself into this time."
He sighed teasingly.
"I always did tell you that that mouth of yours would get you into trouble."
Aaron barked a laugh. "And you were right. But that's not the problem. Not this time."
"Oh?" his old master asked, as he led Aaron to a nearby bench. "And what is it?"
"I can't tell you."
"Can't or won't?"
"It's better if I don't."
"Is it still that you don't trust me, lad?"
"No, sir," Aaron said, shaking his head. "It's not that. It's just, well, it's safer for you if you don't become involved." It was his old master's turn to frown.
"I have only ever taken one apprentice in my life, lad. You know that as well as I do. Many have come to me for training, and I denied them all. I chose you because you had something the others didn't."
"Strong jawline?"
the grey-haired man snorted. Not hardly. I chose you because you have a strong spirit, boy, a strong heart. When I first met you, it was buried beneath a river of hate and anger, true. Clouded by wasted thoughts of revenge, but still there for anyone to see if they looked closely enough. Though you picked up the blade faster than anyone I've ever seen, my biggest regret is that I was never able to pierce that hate of yours. So tightly did you wrap it about yourself. Yet now you seem... No, you are different. I wonder, what has changed? What is it that has taken the place of all that hate?
Aaron shrugged, suddenly uncomfortable. Something more important, I guess.
His old master's eyes narrowed for a moment, then he burst into a fit of laughter.
What's so funny? Aaron said, frowning. Darrell wiped tears from the corners of his eyes and managed to get himself under control.
Why, boy, for a moment, you sounded like you were talking about a cause. Funny considering that you always used to tell me that there was nothing worth giving your life for. That a man who dedicated his life to something besides himself and his own happiness was the worst kind of fool.
I don't see how it's funny, Aaron muttered.
Darrell watched him for several seconds, then his eyes widened in realization.
You're serious?
Aaron didn't respond.
Well, the man said, smiling, what about that? Praise the gods.
You can if you want. Personally, I wouldn't waste my time. They never listen. The old man sighed.
Some things never change.
Still, just because you don't see the gods doesn't mean they aren't there, boy. After all, we humans have a way of missing things, don't we?
What are you talking about?
The swordmaster shrugged. I'm just saying we miss things. For example, does your lady know how much your wounds are really bothering you? Does she know how close you came to being beaten in your first match?
I was fine.
Don't you lie to me, boy, the man answered, his grey eyes narrowing. You weren't fine. You were nearly beaten by some noble fool who couldn't tell his ass from a hole in the ground. The only thing that snobby bastard knows about sword fighting is what he heard in the stories his wet nurse told him when he was on her tit, and he almost bested you. You, a pupil I spent years training, almost beaten by a pup whose blades never tasted blood.
Aaron started to protest, and thought better of it.
He spent a lot of time with the swordmaster, and he knew from experience that the man rarely grew angry. But when he did, it was best to stay quiet and wait for the storm to pass. Now let me help you, Aaron. Whatever it is, it's clearly important enough for you to enter a tournament when you can barely move your left hand.
Yes, that's right. I know of that too. Why, a man would have to be blind to miss how it shakes.
I can't, sir, Aaron said. I can't. You went through enough trouble for me in the past. I won't mix you up in this too.
Darrell sighed and sat back.
All right then, lad. Have it your way. But keep something in mind. Not everyone in the tournament is a pampered dandy. Sooner or later you'll run into someone with some real skill. And what do you plan on doing then?
I'll figure it out.
Darrell shook his head sadly, running a hand wearily across his lined face. Well, you'd best be going before you're missed. He rose from the bench, and Aaron followed suit. I'm staying in Midtown. An inn called the Absent Bard. You come find me if you need me, okay?
Yes, sir.
The swordmaster met his eyes for several moments. Finally, he nodded. Whatever you're up to, be careful, boy. I'll see you in a couple of hours.
All right.
Without another word, Darrell walked out of the church. Aaron frowned as he watched his old master go, suppressing the urge to stop him and tell him everything, knowing that it would only put the man at terrible risk for no reason. He waited, giving Darrell time to get a lead so that no one would see them leaving together. He turned back to the altar, gazed at the carving of Nalesh, and frowned. The priest said that the Father of the Gods wrote the story of each and every person's life in his book, creating and destroying thousands, hundreds of thousands, in a story that stretched onward into eternity. He was known as the world's first and greatest author. But Aaron didn't see why. To his mind, if life was a book, it was nothing short of horror. And poorly done horror at that.
Chapter 38. His feet felt heavy as he started back to the inn. He was happy to have seen his old master again, but their conversation had brought back the